Hi, this is Sylvia Haskovitz. I am with the Center for Nonviolent Communication, and I'm excited to bring to you this introductory to nonviolent communication. I want to tell you a little bit about how this work began and also how I got involved in it and what's my interest in sharing this with you. First, how the work began. Marshall Rosenberg is the founder of this work, nonviolent communication, also called compassionate communication. Sometimes we use the acronym NVC. Not NBC, but NVC to tell you what it is. And basically, the whole process of nonviolent communication began when he grew up in Detroit. He lived during the race riots of the 50s and was curious why in the neighborhood where his family lived, why it was that some people responded to the violence that was happening with more violence and others responded with compassion. And one of the people that responded with compassion to the violence was his grandmother. So he went about trying to understand why human beings sometimes respond back with compassion and sometimes with violence. And as he studied, learned more about this, became a psychologist, and he's also an international peacemaker, he came to put together a process of communication, a four-step process that I'll share with you today. But I'll also share with you, to me, what's even more important than the four-step process is the consciousness with which we live our lives. And I'll give you some examples of that as well. But first, let me tell you how I got started and what excited me. When I was about 15, I remember taking a class in school, in high school, on family education. And I remember thinking about how I wanted to live in a different world, how I really wanted people to understand each other differently, to live more connected to each other. And the great sadness that I felt. So I had devised a whole program when I was 15, trying to figure out what people really needed to live their lives more joyfully. And I thought about also communicating with your children. My father overheard the conversation from the next room and said, "What would you like to talk about?" in a tone that told me this wasn't a question that he really wanted answered. My judgment about my parents was that all that was spoken about was either gossip or the food we were eating. I was bored. I longed for deeper conversations about philosophy, life, things I valued and found important. And I ended up going to my room and my father followed. The details of the next half hour are still a little fuzzy to me. I remember my father and me on the bed, physically hitting each other. My mother came into the room screaming, "Stop it!" and told my father to leave the room. I left my parents' house and went to a friend's for a few days. I stopped at the local library and checked out every book on parent and child relationships I could get my hands on. When I came back home, I wrote these words to my father on an index card. "When can we start resolving our differences instead of trying to drown them with time?" I think I was more grown up at 17 than I am at 45. I was too scared to give this to my father, so I left it on my dresser in my room. When my boyfriend left my parents' house at 3 a.m. that morning, he took the card, unbeknownst to me, and placed it on the kitchen table for my parents to find in the morning before I woke up. I received a message back from my father that morning saying that when I apologized, we could talk. When I read that he wanted me to apologize, I was livid. I believed he was in the wrong. I went to my lifeguarding job at the Minneapolis Jewish Community Center and proceeded to write down a laundry list on butcher block paper of all the horrible things my father had said and done to me since I was a small child. When I returned from work, I asked my father if he was ready to talk. We went into the den and spent the next 3 hours sharing our different perceptions of the same situation. When I showed him my complaints, his comments were, "You thought that? I really meant this." It was a tremendous relief to learn that we simply saw the same situations from different perspectives. That was not about one person being right and the other being wrong. It was about both people being human. We cried, we laughed, we hugged. It was the beginning of a tremendous healing. I was terrified of my father for the first 11 years of my life. And what I've come to understand since learning nonviolent communication is that when someone is scared and doesn't acknowledge the fear, the words they speak sound like attacks. I vowed on that day to never bury painful conversation, but to approach the person and get resolution of the issue. I was saddened by the amount of time I believed to have wasted in holding on to my negative perceptions of my dad. Now I share tools with others that help people check out their perceptions. I have found that 99.9% of the time that I check out my perceptions, even with people I am closest to, I am inaccurate in my assessment. These assessments that we hold as truths without ever verifying them keep us separate and disconnected. That day, 28 years ago, I began to see my father's humanness and felt the joy of honest, compassionate communication. Through seeing his humanity, I began to appreciate my own. And to me, that was that first start of realizing that perceptions are not reality and how important that is when we're not feeling great about life and we think somebody's done something to us, to really check out what we're telling ourselves and what the real truth is about the situation. That was the beginning of some real moment of clarity for me. And then years later, when I was a nonprofit director in San Francisco, I met a woman named Kim Allison, who became my mentor in nonviolent communication. And she had studied with Marshall Rosenberg at Washington University in St. Louis. And she had taken most of her graduate classes in social work from Marshall and then followed him around the country because she really, really liked what it is he was saying. And she really wanted to offer this work to as many people as wanting to hear. So when she came to California, she worked as a nonprofit director in the same office as I had. And something about what she was doing, the way she was talking to people, the way she was connecting, the way she was getting more of what she wanted in life, I really wanted what she had. And I love sayings, so throughout this, I'll be offering you different sayings. And the saying I really enjoy is, when your example is something others want to follow, change begins. And so it was for me. The change that I wanted to make, I saw she had some gifts, some skills, some ways of communicating from her heart that were much more fun than what I was doing. So I asked her about where she had learned them, and I had found out that Marshall Rosenberg was to be coming to the Bay Area in San Francisco very shortly after. So I planned to go, and I did finally meet Marshall Rosenberg, and I realized again how important it was to really learn to speak from my heart. Throughout this tape together, I'll be talking about many, many different things. And one of the things that I love, one of the other little phrases that I love is a Picasso phrase. It says, good artists copy and great artists steal. So I'll be stealing lines from people. I'll be hopefully crediting people that I've stole them from. But I really do enjoy people's way of seeing life that's helpful to others. So I'll be sharing many of those as well. One of the things my cousin Bev had said to me years ago was to think about the first thing that you remember from when you were young and that there would be impact as you grow older. So I thought back about what was the very first thing I ever remembered about life. And I was older than many people of their first memory. I think I was about 5. And I was in kindergarten. And I remember having a weekly reader. And the teacher had said, if you forget to put your name on the weekly reader, it'll be thrown out. And I did forget, and it was thrown out. And my father was very unhappy about that. So he went down to school, and he spoke his truth to the teacher and the principal. And in the end, he got what he wanted. He got the teacher to take the weekly reader out of the basket and for me to have it back. But in the process, he destroyed relationships, which impacted me. So it's funny that that's what she had asked me to do, is to think back about the first thing I remembered. And in thinking back, that's going to tell you about something that you will do in your life in the future. And for me, what I learned was to get what you want, but to burn your bridges or to somehow disconnect from people that are important to you in the process doesn't really get you what you want. So what I now share is a process of communication to say what's in your heart in a way people are most likely to respond to with compassion back. So what does it take to sort of shift our consciousness, to have our consciousness go from one of judgment, blaming, labels, other people, denying choice, saying what people we think people are doing to us, that person made me angry, that person made me sad, which is all of our habitual way of looking at the world. It's what we learned growing up. It's what we learned in our jackal system. in our jackal government system, where it's about right and wrong, good and bad, appropriate and inappropriate. All the labels and judgments in this process of nonviolent communication become what we call habitual, our habitual language, or our jackal language. We use the word jackal to symbolize those ways in which people communicate that deny choice, that put us in a box, that separate us from ourselves and our humanity and other people's humanity. So one of the things that this process looks at is, what kind of consciousness would I like to have in this world? What would really serve me best? Or what we call life-serving system. And the natural state of being, or what we use as the giraffe as a symbol, we use the giraffe to symbolize it has the largest heart of any land animal. So we learn to use it as a language of the heart. The giraffe represents the language of the heart. It also has a long neck. So I like to think of sticking your neck out for the good of humanity. And sometimes being vulnerable really is sort of sticking your neck out. You're putting yourself out, making yourself vulnerable, which in the long run to me has such incredible benefit and impact. So that giraffe consciousness is really about feelings and needs, yours and mine. It's about making value judgments and not moral judgments. It's about giving as a gift. I'm giving because it gives me joy to give to you. In that habitual place, or that jackal consciousness, I give because I think I have to, or I must, or I should. And I worry about what will happen if I don't. And so in the way that we ask for what we want when we're in our giraffe consciousness is, I'm going to put out my request, and I'd like you to meet that request if it meets your need to do so, and only if it does, if it gives you joy to give to me. Because I know that if you're going to give to me because you think you have to, or you should, or you must, or you're afraid of punishment, or you're trying to buy love, I know that everybody will suffer if that's the way in which you give to me. So in our giraffe consciousness, it's about giving for reasons that no one will regret later, that we actually will be serving each other in giving. It's really about bringing us back to our natural state of being. It's a natural consciousness. I'm going to go through and just reiterate the focus of consciousness when we are working in this process of communication. And I say process because nonviolent communication really is a process. Most of us in our culture really look towards solution. When we get into a conflict with someone, what we want to do is find the solution. And in this process, what I find beautiful is we come to the solution through the process of connection. And to me, the solution that we find when we get connected is much greater than one we've already set out in our minds to accomplish. And so the habitual state, the jackal paradigm, also we work sometimes in partnership with other organizations, and sometimes we work with partnership. And what they use is the dominator paradigm. So if you're familiar with Rhian Eisler's work, that with the jackal paradigm would also be called the dominator paradigm. And so when you come from that place, it's from your head. It's static thinking. We label and classify people. That person's rude. That person's inconsiderate. That person is a jerk, doesn't know what he or she's talking about. So we come from a place of analyzing, blaming, and criticizing. And we make moral judgments. What I think of you based on your behavior. And I evaluate you in terms of what's right or wrong with you, what's good or bad or inappropriate or appropriate. And I give from a place of have to, should, or must. And it's coming from a place of duty, obligation, and it's coming out of guilt. And I make demands of you, and I deny responsibility. And the way we know in this process whether something is a request or a demand is not how I ask it to you, or how I ask something of you, but it's more of, how do you respond? How do I respond to you when you say no to my request? So if you were to say to me, Sylvia, I'd really like you to make a tape on children and parents. And I'd say to you, You know, I'm really guessing that you have a lot of desire to be more connected with your children and would really love some help in that. So, you know, there's something that's keeping me from wanting to do that right now. Something I'm much more excited about at the moment is really about people that are going through the grieving process. I'm wondering how you feel about just hearing that part from me. And if the person or you would respond and say, well, you know, that's really a lot of nerve. You're asking for what we want, and now you're saying, well, that doesn't work for you. I mean, that's, how is that fair? And so if you're saying that my no is not accepted and not respected, then I know what you were saying was really demanding something of me. And so the process of nonviolent communication is about letting go of the outcome from a particular person. It's knowing that we can get our needs met in harmony with somebody else and not at the expense of anyone else. So just a review of that natural place, that giraffe or the partnership paradigm in partnership education. It's the integration of head and heart, and it's process thinking. So I'm in the moment. It's very fluid. I know that everything happens in this moment. And that if I think in static terms, I'm really not in the flow of life. So I understand and I empathize and I make value judgments about what I enjoy and what I don't enjoy, but not what I think of you for doing something specifically. So I evaluate in terms of feelings and needs, yours and mine. And I give from the heart freely because it's joyful. And one of the greatest examples would be after 9/11. People gave from their heart freely because it gave them joy to be giving to other people. It wasn't a have to or a should or a must. It was an outpouring of desire to give. And people make requests in this process, knowing that they want people to give to them if it gives to the other person in giving, that it's an equal contribution. And one of the ways that Marshall Rosenberg talks about that is the joy that a child gets from feeding a hungry duck, where the difference between giver and receiver, there is no difference. It's the same thing. People are getting joy from both ends, so you can't really tell the difference between the giver and receiver. And we make choices. I choose to work because I'd really like to sustain myself in a particular way, rather than I have to work. It's a language of choice. Some of the ways I know best to get in connection with that consciousness of nonviolent communication is some of the work of Gary Barron. He talks about 10 things you can do to contribute to internal, interpersonal, and organizational peace. So let me go through those with you because I think they're very helpful and valuable in really getting in touch with the way in which you want to be in the world. The first one is to spend some time each day quietly reflecting on how you'd like to relate to yourself and others. Spending some time each day reflecting on how you'd like to relate to yourself and others. Being in that place of choice. And the second one is remembering that all human beings have the same needs. We all share the same needs for love, appreciation, connection, acknowledgement, recognition, and the list goes on and on. The third is to check your intention to see if you are as interested in others getting their needs met as your own. Do I value your needs as much as I value my own? And the next one is four. When asking someone to do something, check first to see if you are making a request or a demand. Does the other person have a choice? Are you wanting what you're wanting, regardless of what the other person is wanting? Then I really want to go inside and check again. Because my need is never to get another person to do something for me. My need might be for support, and my request would be asking for a specific person to do something if that worked for them as well. The next one is, instead of saying what you don't want someone to do, say what you do want the person to do. So often we say, I don't want you to hurt him. I don't want you to play that way. But we don't tell the person what it is we do want. So saying a don't is pretty hard to do. How does somebody do a don't? Tell them what you would like. Put out a clear request of what would meet your needs. Instead of saying what you want someone to be, Say what action you'd like the person to take that you hope will help the person be that way. So rather than saying to somebody, I want you to be more understanding, the request might be, can you tell me back what you heard me say to see if you get what I'm going through right now? The next is, before agreeing or disagreeing with anyone's opinions, try to tune in to what the person is feeling and needing. So often, especially when we're in political debates or any other situation where I have a different opinion, I want to educate. I want to share something different. But what this is really requesting is that first you empathize, you acknowledge what the other person is saying before you react to it. Because so often we talk about our head thoughts rather than our heart feelings and needs, about what's truly going on inside of me. Instead of saying no, say what need of yours prevents you from saying yes. This one I like, especially for children. It's so easy to say, no, I'm not going to do that. What I'd like you to take a look at as another option is to say, you know, I really want to acknowledge what it is you want, how you're feeling and what you're needing. And then I'd like to tell you what keeps me from wanting to do that at this point. It's much easier to hear a no when you also hear what need of the other person is keeping them from saying yes to you. If you are feeling upset, think about what need of yours is not being met and what you could do to meet it, instead of thinking about what's wrong with others or yourself. So think about what need of yours isn't being met and what you could possibly do. It's so easy to point your finger at somebody else when you're not getting what you want. Well, they're not doing it this way. Well, I went to a seminar and they didn't give us a break. What I could do instead is think about what I need, and I could then ask for what it is I'd like, rather than pointing the finger and blaming somebody else or blaming myself. And the tenth one is, instead of praising someone who did something you like, express your gratitude by telling the person what need of yours that action met. Now, I'm a major chocolate eater, probably not great for my health, but I really enjoy the flavor. And one of the things that I think about when I think about giving appreciation or gratitude, so often we'll say thank you. And many times people will not have a clue specifically what you're referring to. Sometimes they will, but they still aren't really clear about what you're thankful for. So for me, in the chocolate connection, I think of a thank you as sort of more of a stale chocolate brownie. And I think of telling somebody exactly what need of theirs is being met as a way to add richness to life. So adding that rich chocolate frosting to that brownie. So then I can say, if somebody did something for me, I could say, wow, I'm so grateful, because I so needed support at the time when my dog had died. And I am just so grateful that you were there for me to be able to just vent and tell you what a horrible time I was going through. It's easy to say thanks, but it's much more difficult to look inside and say what need of mine is being met. And it's so much richer to connect with somebody in that way. So that's Gary Barron's 10 things you can do to contribute to internal, interpersonal, and organizational peace. Some of the things that people say oftentimes in learning this process is that it's much more difficult in practicing than you would think. And my response to that is that if you practice every day, then when you need something the most, it's easiest to draw on the tools that you have. And that's a Dean Ornish phrase or saying. And I really find that this is a process like a new language. It's a whole new paradigm of looking at the world. To me, it's really getting back to a paradigm that we knew as babies. Because when we were very small, if we wanted something from our parents, we would cry and get our parents' attention. We wouldn't blame them or shame them or guilt them. We would simply call attention to our needs. And our parents would then, if you can visualize this even on this tape, would put on their giraffe ears, and they would hear our feelings and needs and guess what it is we needed. Was the baby thirsty, hungry, tired? And they would respond to whatever it is that they heard the need was for. And they knew that they had understood accurately when the baby stopped crying. This is a process to get us back to that same natural state that we first started out at. a place and a way to connect to what's going on in somebody based on their feelings and needs. And so in thinking about this process, I wouldn't suggest after hearing a one-hour tape that you go out and try your most difficult situation first using this process. I would try it in situations that are not as charged for you, that don't bring up as much pain for you. One of the things, Andrea, I think it's Gid or Giddy says, is to sail to another shore, you have to be willing to lose sight of the land for a long, long time. And I found in learning a second language, the same thing, is when you start to learn the language, when you go to that country where people speak that language, if your skills in that language is not as great as your English and the other person knows English better than what you know, they'll probably respond back in English. But when you become more fluent, then people respond in a similar way. And I find the same with this process, is once we become more fluent in speaking this language of the heart, people respond back very similarly. I really don't think it's possible to remain jackal when you're talking to someone that's giraffe speaking over time, because it's somebody speaking to you from their heart, which brings you back to your place of heart connection. The truth is we all want to contribute to each other. So what we need to look at sometimes is what keeps us from wanting to contribute to somebody at any given time. One of the things that Ike and Judith Lassiter played with, they call that story I told you about the duck, about a child's joy feeding a hungry duck. They had started something in their relationship called the duck index, and I also call it the duck meter, where if Judith wants Ike to take out the garbage, she would then say, "Where does that fit on your duck index?" And I would compare that to 10 would be the joy of feeding that hungry duck, and 1 would be root canal. So where is it that you would fit? So she would have a sense of how much joy he'd be getting from giving to her in that moment. One of the other phrases that I really enjoy is Edward Brown's saying. It says, "The cause of our emotions is our internal reality and not other people's behaviors." So often we want to point the finger and say it's because that person did X, Y, or Z that I'm feeling this way. But I know for myself, I can think of a few examples just to know that that's totally not true. An example, I was driving today to come make this tape and I hadn't eaten lunch yet. So I had a little something in the car that I was going to eat. And I was a little bit later than I wanted to in leaving my house. Most of the time when I'm later than I want, I'm not happy to see that red stop sign or stoplight. But in this case, what happened was, is I got there and I thought, oh, exciting. I get a time to stop that I can actually take a bite of what it is I brought with me, because it was a little messier and I didn't have as many napkins as I wanted with me. But in another situation, I would possibly be very upset if I had a stoplight and I really wanted to get somewhere and I had started 5 minutes later than I wanted. So often it has nothing to do with what it is that's around us, what it is that's happening outside of ourselves. It's what's my need at that moment. And so my need in the car was, my need was to eat. I was hungry. I was feeling hungry. I had a need to eat. And another time I might have been frustrated and I had a need to keep an agreement of a time commitment. So depending on my needs, the situation, I'll respond to the situation differently. But the situation might be the exact same situation. My response is different based on my needs. Some of the other phrases that I really enjoy in this process. The Marshall Rosenberg phrase is, "The nonviolent communication dance continues until we can contribute to each other's well-being joyfully." So it's all about joyfully connecting with each other. So let me read you something that Thich Nhat Hanh wrote that I really enjoy, because to me, nonviolent communication is about being present in the moment. "Our true home is in the present moment. To live in the present moment is a miracle. The miracle is not to walk on water. The miracle is to walk on the green earth in the present moment." I love that. Something about being present. And that really is what empathy, which is part of this process of nonviolent communication, is about. There's two different pieces to this process. We've talked a little bit about the spiritual underpinnings. There's also a process of communicating. And the way that we do that is there's two parts to the communication. There's expressing with honesty and there's receiving with empathy. And when I express with honesty, There's a four-part process to that. And how do I do that? Well, first thing I do is I observe behavior. What did the person say or do that stimulated feelings in me? What exactly am I responding to? So I'll give you an example. I've collected many over the years. One example is somebody says, "I hate it when you tell me what to do." So I'm going to translate that into possibly what the person is responding to. So an observation would be, when I hear you telling me what you'd like, without acknowledging what it is that I've already done that you've appreciated. So that's the observation. And the feeling, which is the second part of the process, might be, I feel sad. And the third step would be, what is my need that's not being met? Well, I have a need for acknowledgement. I have a need for balance. And the request might be, can you tell me a couple of things about what you do like that I've done? So that's a way to use the four-step process in observing. Another example might be a coworker talks in, this is a response that somebody had given to me at a talk. A coworker talks incessantly and interferes with my getting my work done. And so what we have here is an evaluation. I know it's an evaluation because we use words in evaluating behavior, things as incessantly or to, T-O-O. So we're in fact evaluating the behavior as opposed to really sharing specifically what I'm observing, which makes the difference between an observation and an evaluation. So how can I put this into an observation? A coworker is talking more than I would like, and I'm not getting as much work done as I'd like. So that would be putting it into an observation rather than an evaluation. And the second piece would be, how do I feel? Well, I feel angry. I feel frustrated. And the third step would be, what's my need that's not being met? I have a need for choice. I have a need to complete a project. So I have a need for some completion. And then I can put out a clear request. See, in other communication processes, you might have some form of the first three steps. What I really like about nonviolent communication is it connects me back to the other person in the fourth step. So first I'm observing behavior. What am I seeing? What are you doing that's stimulating feelings in me? Again, you're not the cause of my feelings, but what are you doing that's stimulating feelings in me? So I'm going to respond to that. Then what's my feeling about that? And feelings happen in my heart. They happen somewhere in my body. They're not in my head. Heads are thought feelings, or as John Cunningham would call them, as faux feelings. So when I'm up in my head, instead of really feeling in my heart, some of the feelings that I use instead would be, I feel ignored, I feel attacked, I feel threatened. If it's a feeling, according to nonviolent communication process, it's not about anybody else doing it to you. It's something you can feel in your heart all by yourself. The third step is about a need. It's a need, and it's a one-word need. It's a need that we would all share at some point. So again, needs for acknowledgement, fun, creativity, love, expression. Those are possible needs that I might have. And that's different than a strategy or who we'd like to have meet that need. So my need isn't to have you acknowledge me. My need is for acknowledgement. The fourth step is what I'd like from you if you can do it willingly, if it's something you would enjoy giving to me as a gift. So it's giving as a gift that's part of that giraffe consciousness. So that's the process of expressing from my heart. The other part of the process is receiving somebody else's message, even when it's hard to hear, with empathy. So how I would receive that, let's say somebody says to me, "You jerk, what were you thinking?" My response might be, if I was wanting and able to really understand what was going on for this other person, which is really the only reason I would give empathy, if I'm really wanting to connect with their heart, even if they're speaking in a way that might be potentially difficult for me to hear, if I have my giraffe ears on, which means I'm hearing only feelings and needs, it's easier for me to hear their message without taking it personally or attacking back, which is what I do when I have my jackal ears on, when I'm hearing somebody's message with that jackal consciousness. So with my giraffe ears on, how I would hear that would be something like, so when you just said what you said, that's the observation, are you feeling frustrated? Are you needing some acknowledgement? Would you like me to try to understand you in a different way? I'm just going to tune in and guess. The good news is I don't have to get it accurately. In fact, whether or not I guess accurately or not, it helps the person with the jackal comment or with the comment, the difficult to hear message, it helps them go deeper into what's really truly happening for them. It helps them almost unpeel the onion to get to the real kernel of truth inside. That's what empathy helps us do, and also it helps us to heal whatever pains, because really, if that jackal message, if that person would have some communication tools, some nonviolent communication tools, and really be able to speak from their heart, they wouldn't be speaking to you in jackal. So really, we all come from that heart place if we can just unravel and find out what's in our heart. I like to think sometimes as that jackal speak as kind of a mask. I'm feeling uncomfortable. I'm feeling unhappy. I don't know what to do with all these feelings. So I put it out in a way that could sound attacking or blaming or shaming or criticizing, because I'm scared inside. And so the same thing when I'm going to express myself, if I've got some feelings of anxiety or fear, I want to acknowledge those feelings to myself first, even if I don't say them out loud. Because when I speak from that place of feeling anxiety or fear, oftentimes the person on the other end of the message hears it as an attack. And what I've learned in my communication classes is that you can't not communicate. So we are always communicating. And so whether or not you say, I was really angry at somebody, but I didn't tell them I was angry, you didn't have to. They picked it up. So this process gives you a way to express your truth in a way that's easy to hear and easier for the person to receive with compassion. And then if you put it out in your best giraffe tools and they hear it with their jackal ears on, and take it personally or attack you back, then you can keep your giraffe ears on and simply hear the feelings and needs of how they took it, but not worry about your delivery, because you were clear in your heart of how you put it out, just your feelings and needs. And they weren't able to take those in as a gift because they were in pain at the moment. So when people are in pain, they often respond in jackal. So if we can think about people in pain responding in jackal and just translating their jackal into what's in their heart, it's healing for them and connecting for both of you. And it's really about seeing each other's humanness, because we're all going to make messes in this world. The beauty to me of using this process is also having the ability to clean up your messes, to go back and say, wow, I really regret what just happened, and I feel really sad about it. But I'd really love to stay connected. Are you willing for me to try again in a different way that might be more fun to hear? So it's a way for me to say, you know what? I'm human. If I have my giraffe ears on myself, I can regret what I did. If I have my jackal ears on when I do something that I don't like afterwards, then I start blaming myself and shaming myself and guilting myself. So I want you to really hear with giraffe ears on our humanness and how sometimes after some interaction or some situation, we wished we would have done something differently. But doing it the way we did is really about our humanness. And it's not that we should have done it any differently. We did it the way that we wanted to do it in that moment. And sometimes we have regrets later on. So how do I use this process? To me, there's many, many practical applications. One of the things that I really find helpful in this process is it helps us speak succinctly. This whole process is only 40 words or less. 40 words or less to either express myself or to hear your message with compassion. That means I need to be pretty clear about what the person said or did, how I'm feeling, what my need is, and what my request is. And with that, then with those 40 words, I really put out my clear message in a way a person can most easily take it in without defensiveness. Most often when I'm nervous about expressing something or I have things to say, I speak in more words than people can take in. And they act like they're listening to me, but they basically have their jackal ears on, and what they're doing outwardly to me is saying, uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. And they're not with me at all. So in this process, we stop people when we've heard one word more than we've wanted to hear to tell them what's going on in us. And that might sound like this. First, I'd say, excuse me, when I'm hearing you speaking in more words than I can take in, I feel kind of frustrated because I really want to stay connected with you. It would really help me to know how to listen to you if you'd tell me what you'd like back from me in telling me the story. Are you willing to do that? So it's a way in which I can connect from my heart to the other person. My guess is that people that are speaking in more words than anyone else can take in are probably not enjoying themselves very much either, and are probably going to be grateful for you to bring them back to the connection with you. One of the other ways that we can use this process is making less communication messes. So I talked about cleaning up the messes you do make, but imagine even making less messes because you have more skilled communication in saying what's going on for you. It's also used for mediation. And to me, what's really helpful is clarity of what you're wanting. It's so easy to speak with somebody when they're clear on what they want and they just put out their direct request, a doable request, easily. Then I can choose whether that would work for me or not. When I have to spend more time than I'd like trying to figure out what the person wants from me, I get frustrated because I really love ease in communication. You can also, ways to use this or a practical application is speaking in a way people are more likely to want to give to you. When you're not blaming somebody or shaming somebody and you're speaking from a place of compassion, it's more likely people want to give. So much of our correspondence these days is through email or through written word. And we can use this process as well when we write an email to give a tone of really connecting with the other person and putting out my feelings and needs and direct doable request as my fourth step. To me, one of the practical applications is just more joy and connection in my life, to resolve conflict compassionately, to be able to give from a place of joy. Because again, if I get something or if I demand something and I get somebody to do it for me from that place of demand, basically what they're doing, they have a choice really when they hear a demand. They can either submit or rebel. But in either case, there's a big payment for that. One of the things my mentor Kim Allison said is that wants nurture relationships, wants or needs, and demands drain them. And I really like that because demands really do tend to drain relationships. When people give from a place of thinking they have to or they should or they must, the energy goes down. There's not much fun and joy in that interchange. One of the things that Marshall Rosenberg says is, I want to be flowers for your table, not air for your lungs. I like that, not air for your lungs. And that really to me is putting out a request of, this is what I'd really like from you, if you're willing, wanting, able, with love to give that to me. Not because you think you don't have a choice and there's nothing else you can do. One of the things Phil McGraw says, so if any of you are not Phil McGraw lovers, if you'll bear with me on this quote, because I like it. The quality of the relationship is dependent on how well each person's needs are met, which to me is really about nonviolent communication. Peace. It does not mean to be in a place where there's no noise, trouble, or hard work. It means to be in the midst of those things and still be calm in your heart. Not sure who wrote that, but I really enjoy that. To me, it really summarizes what nonviolent communication is all about. It's about a place of finding that inner peace. How do I find inner peace when things around me or situations around me or challenges around me stimulate a lot of feelings in me? And oftentimes my needs aren't being met. I want to read to you a true story about how to be positive again. In the Babemba tribe of South Africa, when a person acts irresponsibly or unjustly, he is placed in the center of the village, alone and unfettered. All work ceases, and every man, woman, and child in the village gathers in a large circle around the accused individual. Then each person in the tribe, regardless of age, begins to talk out loud to the accused, one at a time, about all the good things the person in the center of the circle has done in his lifetime. Every incident, every experience that can be recalled with any detail and accuracy is recounted. All his positive attributes, good deeds, strengths, and kindnesses are recited carefully and at length. No accomplishments or any other things are permitted to be fabricated, exaggerated, or be facetious about the positive aspects of his personality. The tribal ceremony often lasts several days and does not cease until everyone is drained of every positive comment he can muster about the person in question. At the end, the tribal circle is broken, a joyous celebration takes place, and the person symbolically and literally is welcomed back into the tribe. I just imagine how different our world would be if we would see people that are going through difficult times as people who are in pain and really need some empathy. So this process is about how can I express myself? How can I hear the other person's message? How can I really focus our attention on both of our humannesses? I have a couple of other examples I want to practice with you using the process. These were written into me. I had suggested people write to me and telling me what exactly is stimulating pain in them that I could respond to using the process. So this one says, I have a friend who tends to run on and on in conversation about herself, her life, etc., spending a lot of time telling me how well she is doing. She seems almost completely not interested in me. And when I try to launch into something about myself, she does none of the things that encourage my talking more, like nodding or asking questions or giving little murmuring acknowledgments, looking right at me, smiling when something is funny. I think the truth is she isn't interested much. So how I would put that into an observation, because I'm hearing that you have a lot of feelings about it, is, you know, when I tell you about what's going on in my life and I don't hear an acknowledgement or a connection or a nod, I feel sad. And the third step I would use where the need goes is I might put my interpretation, because I'm interpreting that to mean that you really don't care much about my life. And then I would check it out. And the fourth step I would say is, in my request, can you tell me if there's truth to that? Is that true for you? And then I'd wait for a response. Because so often where I get into pain is my interpretation, what I think somebody did, how I think that they behaved, and what their intention was. And I don't really know any of that until I check it out with the person that I'm talking about. Give you another example. A particular friend has a friend when she was sick that wasn't available to her. They had been friends over time, and when this friend, we'll call her Sue, was sick, the other friend, we'll call Janet, didn't show up, didn't come to help out, didn't really do any of those things. And so Sue was feeling a lot of pain about this, and she's really wanting to let go of this, but she's not really able to because she's really needing more empathy to hear what was going on for her. So if I were to use the other part of the process, receiving with empathy, I might just tune in and guess what's going on for Sue. So Sue, when you say that Janet wasn't present for you when you needed her most in your friendship, I'm guessing you felt really devastated, really sad. And you were really wanting some acknowledgement that you were cared about, especially at a time when you felt so vulnerable. Now, there might be more for Sue going on, and I might want to go a little deeper and get more. So if she said something like, yeah, you know, and I just can't get over it. I don't know how I can be friends with this person again. I have so much pain around it. It doesn't seem to be easing up or getting any better. So I then might acknowledge more. I'm hearing more information with which to empathize with. So when you're saying what you just did, which is the observation, then I sense, I tune in and guess her feeling. Are you feeling really sad, really upset? And I'm hearing really a need to move forward, to move on, to let go. And you're really finding that tough to do. So are you wanting some way to just release this from yourself so that you could move on and feel more at peace. And depending on what her response is, what happens when we give empathy to somebody is there's almost often a change. There's almost a sigh when they've been heard. To me, empathy is one of the greatest gifts to give to another human being. And unfortunately, what we do rather than empathy most often is we give sympathy. When somebody's going through a rough time, we say, oh, sounds terrible. You should hear what happened to me. Or I'm sad to hear you're having a bad day. Or we start interrogating and asking questions. So all of those are non-empathic ways to give to somebody. And unfortunately, they're not very connecting. Most people really want to know that you're getting them. You're really hearing their pain, really acknowledging what's going on for them. So empathy is about presence. It's about being present to another human being with whatever's going on for them without trying to take it away or to make it different or to soothe your own pain around it. It's simply the presence of your heart to theirs. So this is couple more things that I want to share with you. Just little sayings that I find so valuable to sort of summarize this work. Gerald Yampolsky, I think, says it one of the best I've heard. You can be right or happy, but you can't be both. And Dennis Kucinich, who I'm really enjoying, Ohio Senator, says, if we can change ourselves, we can change the world. We are not the victims of the world we see. We are the victims of the way we see the world. And one of the things people often use, it's kind of a fun saying, it's just victim, warrior, and guardian. What I find before people are really in touch with their feelings and needs is they're in a place which we could interpret as victim. They have no clue what they need. They have no clue what their feelings are. And they're sort of a victim of the world around them. And then I find that warrior place when people realize how long they've been not getting their needs met. They get very upset and very sad about that. So then it's this warrior pose of, you know what? I haven't gotten my needs met for this long. Now it's my turn to get my needs met. And I'm really not as interested in you getting your needs met. And the third stage of this saying that I interpret as the guardian, which I see as the giraffe dance. That really the only way that we can all meet our needs is if your needs and my needs are valued equally. So I try to get my needs met in cooperation with yours, and not at the expense of your needs. But that's really, to me, the process of nonviolent communication. In closing, I want to read you a poem that's called Listen, that I received when I went through a hospice training. When I ask that you listen to me, and you start giving advice, you have not done what I asked. When I ask you to listen to me, and you begin to tell me why I shouldn't feel that way, you are trampling my feelings. When I ask you to listen to me, and you feel you have to do something to solve my problem, you have failed me, strange as that may seem. Listen. All I asked was that you listen, not to talk or to do, but just to hear me. Advice is cheap. 50 cents will get you both Dear Abby and Bill Graham in the same newspaper. And I can do for myself. I'm not helpless. Maybe discouraged and faltering, but not helpless. When you do something for me that I can and need to do for myself, you contribute to my fear and my weakness. But when you accept as a simple fact that I do feel what I feel, then I can quit trying to convince you and go deeper into my understanding of what the feeling's about. Feelings make sense when we understand what's behind them. Perhaps that's why prayer works sometimes for some people, because God is often silent. God doesn't give advice or try to fix things. God simply listens. So please listen and just hear me. And if you want to talk, wait a minute for your turn, and I'll listen to you. So in summary of this tape of the Introduction to Nonviolent Communication, my greatest dream and hope is to reach critical mass in this process of nonviolent communication. My dream is really that people spread this work, and first that they incorporate it into their own selves, really looking at how they're communicating with themselves and others and spread more compassion to the planet. It's my hope for some peace. And the strategy, or one of the strategies, is using this process to be able to connect more compassionately with yourself and with other people. There's a lot of people out there. And if you're really wanting more practice in this process, one way to do that is to order a tape a month from my subscription, and you'll be getting more and more information about how to use this, how to practice this process in your life. So it becomes a part of the way that you communicate with yourself and others, hopefully spreading more peace on the planet.